I have some breaking news just confirmed on Tuesday, October 23rd at the Orpheum Theater. The students from Parkland High School are going to be on a book tour. Their new book, Glimmer of Hope, How Tragedy Sparked a Movement. And that's going to be, again, October 23rd. But you don't have to wait that long. Because back earlier this spring, I was at a town hall meeting that Representative Mark Pocan was holding. And this young woman stood up in the audience. And she started talking. And she said, well, I'm a Parkland High School alum. And I want to ask you what you're doing in Congress. And Mark talked about all the things that they couldn't do. And she said, well, but what are you doing? Here are some things that you can do right now. And I thought, this is somebody we have to have on the stage at Fighting Bob Fest. So let's give a very warm welcome to Paula Bizark.
Hi. My name is Paula Bizark, and I am an alumna of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Thank you. Today marks the seven-month anniversary of the shooting that happened on Valentine's Day at my high school. And I can say that it's really different when it's your school on the news and your hometown that everyone's talking about and everyone knows about now. I remember that day, and when the text started coming in from some of my high school friends talking about a shooting that happened at Douglas, I was shocked. That's not something that happens in Parkland. And my initial assumption was, oh, it's some kid who brought a gun to school and is being arrested. No, that was not the case. I found out that there was at least one person dead, and my heart just sank. I felt sick to my stomach. I remembered that my mom volunteers there once a month on Wednesdays, and the shooting happened on a Wednesday, and I didn't know if she was there or not. So that was a really scary 10 minutes or so that I couldn't get in touch with her, and my mind was just racing, wondering what could have happened to her. And so, of course, I wanted to hear from her and find out that she was okay, but beyond that, I just didn't want her to have to have been there at all. I'm very protective of my mom, and I just didn't want her to have gone through a shooting and gone through that emotional trauma. And I don't think anyone would ever want that for someone that they love and care about. So I was immensely relieved to find out that my mom was fine. She wasn't there. She was actually with my dad at the phone store buying a new phone. And they hadn't heard about the extent of what had happened yet. So of course, she wants to tell me about her new phone. And I said, Mom, I can't listen about your phone right now. Like, I thought you were there. It wasn't until I got home from work that day that I heard that the death toll was 17 people at my high school. Even one would have been too many, but 17. Some of my former teachers are still teaching at Douglas, and I found out that my ninth grade geography teacher had been in the middle of teaching a class on Holocaust history. She was teaching her students about how to prevent hate when the shooter came and murdered two of her students in front of her. My heart breaks for her. She does not deserve that. She does not deserve to have gone through that. She does not deserve to have PTSD and be traumatized every time she hears a fire alarm. And neither do the 3,000 other students and teachers who were on campus that day. It's just so much more horrific for the people who were actually there and had to go through it and had to fear for their lives, even for a second, that they could get shot or that they might not get to go home that day. It's not fair. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to the 17 innocent victims who lost their lives at my high school that day, who didn't get to go home. And it's not fair to the families of the victims, some of whom couldn't even get to see their loved ones' bodies due to the extensive damage that the weapon did, that the shooter did with that heinous weapon. The trauma impacted the entire community, not just the people who were there that day. I live in Madison now, but I was at home in Parkland for the first time last week, for the first time since it happened, and things felt different. I can't really explain, but I felt more on edge than usual. There were MSD strong signs everywhere and Parkland strong signs. The community still remembers it. It's not just something that you can forget happened, especially if you're that close to it. And frankly, I don't want anyone to forget. And that's why I'm going to keep talking about it, and I will keep fighting for change. Thank you. And it's not just schools. It's not schools. Anyone who ever has to go out in public should also be taking a stand and working with us. Nobody wants to get shot. Literally, nobody wants to get shot. So to all of you who have been actively working towards change and helping with education about the issues and voter registration, I'll give a shout out to Next Gen Wisconsin. Thank you. Thank you to all of you. And for everybody, if you're still fortunate enough to still be breathing, please go vote. Mark your calendars. Make a plan. Vote for candidates who will put common sense gun safety laws in place. It is a nonpartisan issue. If you are a candidate and you haven't already, please publicly support gun sense so that we know that you'll have our backs in November. I know I can't name names, but I want to say that everyone should support gun sense. There is a Moms Demand Action table out in the lobby, so please talk to them. Make us proud to vote for you in November. Support things like universal background checks, funding for gun violence research. Support a red flag law in Wisconsin. Florida actually passed a red flag law, and it's already helped prevent homicides and suicides by allowing law enforcement to temporarily take guns from people who are a danger to themselves or others. And it could have helped prevent what happened in Parkland. One day, I think that our right to not get shot will be more important than our right to shoot. I'll leave you with a quote that I read from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas that resonated with me. From 1985, she said, "I'm still yelling and screaming like I've always done, getting all the publicity for the environment that I can. I fought without ever considering compromise. You compromise only from weakness, and we're acting from strength because we're right. If I thought I had to compromise, I probably would have given up the fight a long time ago. Thank you."
Our next speaker may be known to some of you. She graduated from West High School, went to UW-Madison, volunteered at WORT, Community Radio, and then she went on to become a senior writer on the Obama 2012 political campaign, a speechwriter for Planned Parenthood and the Hillary Clinton 2016 campaign, and just recently co-authored the book Make Trouble with Cecile Richards. She was here for a book event with Cecile Richards. She was here last night for the Choose a Palooza, and she's here with us here at Fighting Bob Fest tonight. Give a warm welcome to Lauren Peterson.
Hey, everybody. How about Paula? She's awesome. Thank you. Thank you for that. So I am here tonight as a proud progressive, as a longtime reader of The Progressive, and as someone who grew up on Oak Ridge Avenue and got a good portion of my musical education from going to concerts at the Barrymore. So if I just kind of suddenly stop talking, don't worry, everything's fine. I'm just kind of standing up here imagining that I'm opening for the Indigo Girls. But I'll be back. So, as you heard, I am a speechwriter for progressive leaders, which means they're usually the ones on stage, and I'm usually the one sweating it out in the back of the room, hoping they stick to the script, which they really never do. But that's okay. We're here anyway. So I want to thank The Progressive and The Capital Times for inviting me to be here, and I want to thank especially Norm Stockwell, my friend. I studied political science in college, but my big passion was community radio. And I was in luck because Madison just happens to be home to one of the best community radio stations anywhere in the world, as we all know. So any fans of WORT in the house, I know you're here. They're the best. And it was really one fateful day, I still remember, that I was doing a volunteer shift at the station, and Norm and our news director, Molly, suggested that I head up to the Capitol to cover this protest that was kind of just getting started, and it really seemed like maybe that was going to kind of become a thing. And I don't know if anyone here was part of the Wisconsin Union protests in 2011, but it was a thing, and they were pretty much a crash course in grassroots democracy. There were teachers and students and nurses and police officers and firefighters. There were Planned Parenthood volunteers and labor leaders and, you know, longtime organizers and little kids who were there at their very first protest. And of course, we can't forget the solidarity singers and all the union cab drivers who were circling the square honking, "Show me what democracy looks like." Yeah, thanks. Some of you out there, this is what democracy looks like. What I saw at the Capitol changed my life, and I know I'm probably not the only one. And for me, it was really as I stood there, you know, jammed in like sardines with a lot of journalists who were trying to report on another frustrating press conference where our governor talked for about 5 minutes but really said not much of anything at all. It hit me that I didn't want to be a journalist. I wanted to be an activist. And so tonight, I think I really have to say a big thank you, actually, to Governor Walker for inspiring me to turn to a lifetime of liberal politics. Because without him, I wouldn't have had the motivation to go on and take every job I've had since, working for Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Planned Parenthood. And I definitely never would have had the opportunity that I had this last year to write a book with Cecile Richards about progressive activism called Make Trouble. So Cecile and I got the idea to write that book after the 2016 election, which didn't exactly turn out how we'd hoped, to put it mildly. And we had the idea to write this book because everywhere we went, you know, on the subway in New York, in coffee shops, one time on in an airport bathroom when she was kind of kneeling on the floor steaming her dress, people would come up to Cecile with this sort of stricken look in their eyes and ask what they were supposed to do next. And actually, for a brief time before our publisher intervened, we thought about calling the book, "Now What the Hell Do We Do?" And that's what the book is about, really. What to do in moments like this one when women my age are fighting the battles our grandmothers won, and it really feels kind of like we're living in a cross between The Handmaid's Tale and 1984. Am I right? And the book is also about the fact that making trouble, by which I mean standing up to injustice, questioning authority, or just plain raising hell, is not only important to a functioning democracy, it can actually be powerful, inspiring, and really a whole lot of fun. And that's a good thing, because our country has really never needed troublemakers more than we do right now. So for the last few months, I've been traveling the country with Cecile on our book tour, and I've been hearing from a lot of people, mostly women, and I have picked up a few brief observations that I want to share with you tonight. So the first one is, women are on fire right now. This may shock you, I know, but the most powerful leadership in America right now is not coming from the White House, and it's not coming from Congress. It is coming from women. So some of you might remember in January 2017 when Paul Ryan promised to put a bill on the president's desk defunding Planned Parenthood. And in the middle of that fight, I was working for Planned Parenthood at the time, and my boss, Cecile, and I decided to take a trip to Wisconsin, and more specifically, to Paul Ryan's district, where there are three Planned Parenthood health centers, which, by the way, provide only preventive care. So you can see why that would really be something he needed to shut down. So that day we were sitting in the waiting room in this health center in Kenosha listening to patients and staff talk about Planned Parenthood and what it meant to them. And one of those patients was this woman named Lori Hawkins. She had come to Planned Parenthood years earlier at a time when she didn't have health insurance, and they detected an issue that might have made it impossible for her to have kids. And Planned Parenthood, as they do for so many people, got her the care she needed. And Lori says that Planned Parenthood is the reason she's a mom today. So, but the story doesn't end there. A few weeks later, I was in Washington, D.C. It was this huge lobby day, and Planned Parenthood patients and staff and supporters had converged on Washington. And who did I run into but Lori again? And she was there with her 13-year-old daughter, Delaney, who said she was there because she wanted to look Paul Ryan in the eye and tell him she would not be here if not for Planned Parenthood. And I know this might be a little hard to believe, but unfortunately, he was unable to meet with them. I'm sure it was a scheduling conflict. So a few weeks later, I was watching the broadcast of a town hall on healthcare when I heard the moderator say, "And now we have a question from Lori in Bristol, Wisconsin." And sure enough, there she is. She's on CNN telling her story. And that would be awesome, but it doesn't even end there. So a couple months ago, when Cecile and I were on our way to a book event, we got this text from Lori asking if Cecile had a few minutes to talk. So I handed over my phone, and I heard Lori say that she had just, you know, sat down around her dinner table with her husband and her two kids because she was thinking about doing something really crazy and running for the state Senate. And today, Lori is a candidate for state Senate here in Wisconsin. And one of the other patients who we met at that same health center in Kenosha is running for the state assembly in her district. And yeah, give it up for Lori and Gina Walkington. Check them out. And as for Paul Ryan, I guess we all kind of know how that story ended. So I really hope he enjoys his retirement. And I hope the people of his district enjoy being represented by their next congressman, Randy Bryce. But, I mean, seriously, can you imagine how different our country would look, how different our state would look, if more people in office had actually been to Planned Parenthood for healthcare? It would be revolutionary. You know, this year, Emily's List, an organization that trains pro-choice women candidates for office, reported that 40,000 women across the country have come forward to be part of their candidate training programs. 40,000, I know, that's huge. And do you know how many women had signed up for their candidate training programs 2 years ago? 1,000. So this is a movement, and women are not waiting for permission or asking for instructions. They are out there right now kicking ass and taking names. And by the way, I am not just talking about women candidates. For years, women have been really the unsung heroes of progressive campaigns. They've been staff, they've been volunteers, they've been donors, they've been voters. And that's especially true for women of color, by the way. Really, across the board, women are the heart and soul of the progressive movement. And we just heard from a few of them tonight who I think really embody that. So everywhere I go, you know, as tough as things are, the women I've met, they don't seem discouraged or demoralized. They seem fired up and determined. And you know what? Standing here tonight listening to Sarah and Ruth and Paula and Christine and everyone else, I feel really fired up and determined too. So I hope you feel the same way. Now, the second thing I've noticed traveling around the country in 2018 is, if we want to win, we are going to have to do more than just resist. You know, I've met a few people these last several months who have told me, really, they just don't bother with politics. And once I kind of got over my initial rage blackout, you know, I try to ask them why. And more than one has said, because politics is just not something that makes a difference in my life. And what that tells me is, as progressives, it is not enough to focus on what we're against. People actually want to know what we stand for. So I think we should kind of make a pact that for every minute we spend talking about the many, many, many ways Donald Trump is destroying our country, and there are many, let's spend 5 minutes talking about our alternative vision. Let's talk about a $15 an hour minimum wage. Let's talk about not only paying women equally, because really, isn't that kind of the bare minimum? But let's talk about really valuing women's contributions. Let's talk about putting in place policies that actually help women succeed in the workplace. You know, let's talk about what we are going to do to confront the opioid epidemic. Let's talk about criminal justice reform. Let's talk about embracing LGBTQ rights and women's rights and workers' rights and disability rights and voting rights and immigrant rights. And let's make that the centerpiece of our campaigns and every speech we give and every ad we run. Let's focus on that for a while and see how that goes. And you know, for too long, people have told us that a progressive agenda just isn't going to work in places like the Midwest. I don't believe that, and I don't think anyone here believes that, because we know that progressive issues are winning issues. And that is why progressive candidates are winning this year in every corner of our country, including some of the places you least expect, and including here in Wisconsin. And let me tell you, I think we're about to see a lot more where that came from this November. And that really brings me to my last big takeaway here is this. Protesting is great. Showing up tonight at Fighting Bob Fest is awesome. You know, getting together with your friends, drinking wine, and writing angry postcards to Senator Johnson, that's great too. That's, you know, it's good for the soul. It makes you feel good. But voting is the whole deal. Now, if you're here, you're probably going to vote in November, but as many as 600,000 people in Wisconsin who voted in the presidential election are not going to vote in the midterms. And in fact, I saw a number the other day that only 30% of millennial women in this country say they are definitely going to vote this year. Now, I'm a millennial woman, and that just breaks my heart because we have so much at stake. There is so much on the line. And we need every eligible voter in this country to turn out in every election, not just the presidential ones. And we really know from years of research that the biggest reason people don't vote is because nobody ever asked them. So this year, we have to ask everybody. If we've learned one thing since 2016, it's that we don't know anything about politics that we thought we knew. Conventional wisdom does not apply anymore. So let's not take anybody for granted. Let's talk to our friends, talk to our neighbors, talk to our coworkers, talk to our family, which I know doesn't always make for the most, you know, comfortable Sunday night dinner, but it is so important and we really have to do it. Because the biggest, best, most powerful rebuke to this president and this Congress and this governor is to show up on Election Day in record numbers. And if we do that, we can make a big difference in people's lives. And the reason I know that is because I have seen it myself. You know, before I ever worked in politics, one of the first political issues that I was aware of was marriage equality. And back when I was in high school, you know, my mom told me that there is an amendment on the ballot in Wisconsin to define marriage as between one man and one woman. And I just could not believe that. And I really couldn't believe it when we lost that fight and the voters in our state passed a cruel, discriminatory marriage amendment. But this morning, my fiance Liz and I went down to the Dane County Clerk's office together to get our marriage license. And in just a few weeks, we are going to get legally married here in Wisconsin in front of all of our family and friends, and we are so excited. You're all invited. Sorry, Liz, she's here tonight. We just did our seating chart, but we'll add a few. There's always room. But really, we're getting married in October in Wisconsin, and we could not have done that 5 years ago. And the reason we can do it today is not because politicians just kind of evolved. In fact, when the Supreme Court ruled that Wisconsin had to recognize same-sex marriages, Scott Walker said it was, and this is a quote, a grave mistake. But the reason I get to marry the love of my life next month is because of people like Edie Windsor and Jim Obergefell, who fought to have their marriages recognized as equal in the eyes of the law. And it's because millions of people organized and marched and held our leaders accountable before they were ready. And it is because we elected President Barack Obama and he appointed two justices to the Supreme Court. So let me tell you, elections matter. So remember that question that I said everyone was asking, that question, what can I do? Well, the answer to that question is more than you're doing right now. And I know you're doing a lot. I know we all have limited time and money and energy, but there is too much on the line not to just put it all out there right now. So how about this? Let's turn off MSNBC, let's log out of Twitter, and let's go knock some doors and make some phone calls for Tammy Baldwin, for Tony Evers, for Mandela Barnes, for Randy Bryce, and for progressive candidates up and down the ballot. Let's take out our wallet and write a check to Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin or Voces de la Frontera or any of the representatives of these amazing organizations we've heard from tonight. Let's call our friends in Alaska and Maine and tell them that a vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh is a vote to overturn Roe v. Wade, and we cannot let that happen. Because really, progress doesn't happen on its own. It happens because we stand up and we fight for it. And even more than that, it happens because we vote for it. So tonight, let's have a great time. And tomorrow, let's go out and let's make a little trouble. Let's raise some hell. Let's do some good old-fashioned rabble-rousing, because that is how we are going to take back this country. That is how we are going to take back this state, and that is how we are going to guarantee a Wisconsin that actually lives up to its motto, forward. So thank you. Have a great night. Let's enjoy these speakers, and then let's get to work.
Lauren Peterson. And she is very serious about voting. As long as I've known her, she's had tattooed on her wrist the date that women got the vote in the United States. You know, there's that bumper sticker, "Listen to women for a change," but I think this year it's become more than a bumper sticker, it's become a reality. Our next speaker, I forget how many months ago now it was, but the current treasurer of the state of Wisconsin was trying to abolish the office, and this woman approached us at the Progressive wanting to write an op-ed about how we should keep the office of state treasurer, and we published that op-ed, we distributed it all around the state through our Progressive Media Project, and now she's the candidate for state treasurer. Give a warm welcome to Sarah Godlewski.
Hello, Wisconsin progressives. How are you doing? You ready to take back our state? So my name is Sarah Godlewski, and I'm a proud fifth-generation Wisconsinite. I am also a product of Wisconsin public schools, and as Norm mentioned, I happen to also be a candidate for state treasurer. So you guys might have heard about the state treasurer. As Norm said a couple months ago, Scott Walker tried to get rid of the office because checks and balances are so overrated. I mean, who needs it? So I will tell you, when I found out about this almost now a year and a half ago, I was completely appalled. Because in my line of work, that's like saying, you know what, we're going to fire our chief auditor, we're going to fire our chief financial officer, and we're going to give that responsibility to our CEO. We would never do that in business. So why is that good government? Any idea how many states do not have a state treasurer or a financial equivalent? Any guess? Zero! We would have been the first state to remove this office. And quite frankly, I thought that was incredibly crazy. And so with the help of the progressive, I am proud to say on April 3rd, we stopped Scott Walker's power grab with 62% of the vote. Unbelievable. And you know what? That's a mandate to try to do something. So people are like, well, Sarah, you're the progressive. What actually should this office be doing? I didn't think it had any responsibilities. Well, let me tell you, these are three things this office should be doing for you on day one. The first is that this office should be your fiscal watchdog. It has the ability to review and examine financial transactions that involve your tax dollars. You might have heard of a company called Foxconn. It's absolutely crazy to think we're just giving out a corporate welfare program. Who's actually going back in there to say, did you spend my tax dollars the way that you said you would? That's crazy. I mean, literally within the last 24 hours, we've seen money missing from the Department of Transportation here in Wisconsin. Over $48 million. Unbelievable. Who's actually trying to like go back there and say, what are you spending our money on? The second thing that this office should be doing is it should be your investing in your future. It is the financial trustee to four trust funds worth over $1.2 billion. That money benefits all public schools in the state of Wisconsin. Last year, it provided $35 million to all public schools for books and technology. I don't know about you, but I think that's pretty important. So here's what's crazy, is that this office has independent investment authority. So we can use it to actually have win-win investment strategies. So how many of you know someone that has student loan debt? Know anyone? So get this, over 1 million Wisconsinites suffer from student loan debt. Last year alone, interest rates for students were up to 14.75%. Absolutely ridiculous. I remember when I graduated, I had almost $75,000 of student loan debt. It was paying 9% interest. And here's what's crazy is students can't refinance it like you can refinance a mortgage. But you know what? The state treasurer can come in and can use this investment fund to say, you know what? I will buy that high interest loan rate from you and refinance it for a 3% or a 4% rate. Imagine that, a win-win solution, and right now the fund is performing at like a 3% rate. So, unbelievable. And so it's those kind of progressive ideas that I'm talking about. And the third thing that this office should be doing is it should be your fiscal advocate. How many remember the Wells Fargo situation where they were kicking people off of their loans, they were raising interest rates? So state treasurers around the country were stepping up and they were literally canceling finance agreements with Wells Fargo. They were fining them for what they did. Any ideas what they did, what we did in Wisconsin? Nothing! And here's what scares me. It's for those of you that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is right now the federal agency to protect us against predatory lending and abuses from big banks, is literally being destroyed by the Trump administration. So if we don't have that right now at the state level, who's fighting for us? Exactly. So, this is exactly what progressive ideals are about, and I will tell you, who knew finance could be so much fun at the same time? So this is exactly the kind of ideas that Wisconsin progressives are bringing to our state to change it. And I will tell you, I am honored to be on an amazing ticket with Tony Evers, Mandela Barnes, Josh Call, and Doug LaFollette, because we're just not being the party of anti. We're actually talking about real solutions that are gonna change this state and bring it back to the days of LaFollette. And the other thing that I'm really proud about is when you look at our statewide ticket, this is exactly what democracy in Wisconsin looks like, with race, age, diversity of gender, everything. And this is what it's about. So I could literally talk about the ticket, I could talk about finance all day, but what it really comes down to is all of you and making sure that we work hard to bring those progressive ideals to in November, because we can't do it without you. So I hope I can count on you in November, and let's make sure that in Ed Garvey and La Follette, we change Wisconsin to what it's been, and let's move forward. Thank you.